upon agreement from last week. So we decided that tonight, as both a companion piece to what we spoke about last week, we talked about the prohibition of Baal Kashrus. So I decided tonight is kind of a companion piece, and also it's certainly relevant to Maseches Bava Kamma, to talk a little bit about the prohibition of Mazik, about damaging somebody else's property, even though most of us are learning the second paragraph, the second half of Bava Kamma, which seems to focus on more Gnevu Gzela, and it's really the first half that deals with the Nyanim of Mazik. There is quite a bit of overlap, and it's certainly a decent topic to discuss in connection with Bava Kamma as a whole. So as we know, the first half of Bava Kamma does deal with these issues of the Chiyuv Tashlumin for Nezikin. If my property hurts your property, then I'm chayiv to pay under the proper circumstances. And the Rosh HaPrakim of this idea is laid out in Parshas Mishpatim, where we are told about the Avos Nezikin, and as Rashi explains in the beginning of Bava Kamma, that Avos in the context of Nezikin is a reference to those categories in Nezikin that are identified in the Chumash. So the Torah tells us certain categories that create a chiyah for us to pay. What's glaringly missing from that section is a clear statement that it's usur to damage somebody else's property, which prompts the question, so let's say I'm going to come up to your car with a sledgehammer, and I'm going to smash in your window, and I have my checkbook ready. I'm ready to pay. I'm going to fulfill all the responsibilities put upon me by the laws of Mazik. So if that's the case, so would we actually think that that's mutter? So would you think that it's permissible to do this? Or would we assume that no, that it's not only that there's a chiyuv to pay, but it's also prohibited to do. So you don't get a clear answer from Parshas Mishpatim. Seems like from the Rishonim and from later sources and from earlier sources, it seems like there's a pretty clear consensus that this is not advisable, that this is prohibited on a couple of different levels. The Rambam certainly states this explicitly in Hilchos Nizkei Mammon, in Parakei Halacha Aleph, that there is an isser to be mazik, even on Manas L'Shalim, even though you're ready to pay and you're not going to shirk your responsibilities, nonetheless, it's still prohibited. And this is something that you see also, again, to make it a little more timely, you see this in Hilchos Tshuva, that the Rambam writes in the beginning of Hilchos Tshuva, that if somebody goes through all the different things that you pay for, if you're a chovel, if you're a ganav, whatever it is, but includes explicitly mazik, if you damage somebody's property, even though you pay for it, there's still a requirement to ask for mechila. You're still not going to be finished with the story unless you get forgiven. So that seems to indicate clearly that it's not only there's an obligation to pay, but there was an issur to something that you did wrong. Happens to be, though, when it comes to the Rambam on this point, there's a little bit of a steer, that in Hilchos Chov L'Mazik, he doesn't say things that way, he doesn't say that you have to ask for mechila. It's a little bit of a question why that is, so that's something you have to figure out, but at least if we forget that exists, and you look at Hilchos Tshuva, so you see that there's a need to ask for mechila when it comes to Mazik also, which seems to stem with what he says in general about Mazik, that this is not simply something that causes you grief in your pocketbook, but this is something that's also caused the grief in Shemayim as well. And this is the way the Nosei Kelim on the tour and the Shulchan Aruch understood their positions as well in Shinai and Ches and Choshen Mishpat. It's understood by the Bach and by the Sma that that's the position of the tour in the Shulchan Aruch, that there's an Isser to be Mazik, even Amanas L'Shalim. You find also other indications, if you want to be Medayik a little bit more, you find also other indications that this is true. For example, so last year we learned the second parak of Kedushin, so that I that in. So in the beginning of the second parak of Kedushin, so the sugi you have there is Ein Shliach L'Dvar Aveir. Right? So if I send somebody to do an Aveir on my behalf, so he can't come and say, well, it's not my fault, I was just following orders. The Gemara says we don't recognize that defense. We say he shouldn't have listened. He should listen to Akash Baruch Hu first. So in that context, so one of the examples the Gemara gives is, let's say I give somebody a torch, and I say, go burn down that building. So that's one of the examples of Ein Shliach L'Dvar Aveir. So apparently, that's considered to be a Dvar Aveir. The act of Mazik is something that is by itself prohibited. You also find, if you start learning Bava Kamma from the beginning, there is a often quoted statement of the Rashba, without getting into all the details of the context, it's a little complicated, but the Rashba and Daf Beis and Mebeis of Bava Kamma, concerning the sugya of Tzlusha Kul Moedes, So if you're holding an Etzer Gisra, Rashbada says that if you have a question, how to apply the concept of Nezikin, so what principle would you apply? So the instinct would be you'd apply Suffolk Mammon Lakula. That basically, if we're not sure how we apply Mammonis, so we basically go Lakula on the Nitba, the one who is holding on to the money, the one who has the Chazaka, we assume he gets to keep it. In other words, Hamotzi Mechaveru Olav Haraya. The burden of proof is always on the one who wants to make you pay. So if it's a question about my responsibilities as far as Nezikin and as far as paying, so we'd assume Lakula on my side, I don't have to pay. But the Rashba says not the attitude we take, or at least in one suggestion interpreting the Gemara, he suggests it's not the attitude we take. But rather, we relate to it as Safek Isser. And we have to be Machmir, I have to pay, because we look at it that way, we look at the rules of Safek Isser, Menatoru L'chumra, and not simply as a straight Mammonis issue. That's also an indication, again, that that's what we're talking about. We're not only talking about paying back, we're talking about the prohibition. And just to bring up one other point before going into the next stage, so this is also a discussion in Choshen Mishpat, in Lamed Daled in Hilchos Eidus. The Bach quotes over there from the Mordechai that a psul Eidus would apply to somebody who is mazik. And we know that if somebody steals, so he's psul Eidus. Somebody is a rasha d'chamas, he does averus which involve money. So the Rashba, the Mordechai that the Bach quotes says this is true as well in the realm of nezikin. If you mazik somebody's property, this also puts you in the category of Pasul Eidus, which is a little bit more of a chiddush than it sounds, and maybe we'll come back to talk about that a little bit. So if all of that is convincing to the extent that there is a prohibition of mazik, right, so we can be pretty confident that if I come with a sledgehammer, not only do I have to pay, but I did something wrong, so the question is, so why doesn't the Torah say so? So what is the marker to answer that? So that was a project that a number of Svarim took up. A lot of Achronim addressed this question. After first assuming question A, which also could have been a question, maybe you would have come to the conclusion there's no Isser. But if we assume, which pretty much seems to be the case, that there is an Isser, so then what is it? What is the prohibition? So just to, again, connect to last week. So right away, the Stipler, in the beginning of his discussion above a comma, he says, I'll tell you what's not a candidate. What's not a candidate for the source is Baltashkis. Why not? There's two problems with Baltashlis. One problem is that Baltashlis, if you assume it's probably the majority view, Baltashlis is probably mutter if it's going to bring you more of a benefit. If it's for Tzarech Adam, if you're going to gain more of a monetary benefit by destroying this item than by not destroying this item, so then the view of the Taz and the Rush seems to be the pretty much the mainstream approach is that Baltashlis is allowed in those cases. So if I can make a case that I'm going to do better by breaking your windshield than by not breaking your windshield, so then Baltashkis wouldn't apply. That's one problem the Stipler has. The other problem he has is that Baltashkis doesn't distinguish between my property and somebody else's property. If Baltashkis applies, then it's just as prohibitive for me to do it to my own stuff as it is to do it to somebody else's stuff. And presumably Mazik doesn't work that way. Presumably Mazik is about breaking somebody else's property. So for those two objections, so the Stipler says we can wipe that one off the table right away, Baltashkis is not really the issue. I was wondering if, at least Dalpi Derech Hashkaf, if you really have to throw Baltashkis completely out, you could say that Baltashkis does play a role. Okay, if we look at the scenario here, we're talking about somebody who destroys property, and then he pays for it. So we're all seemingly in agreement that this guy did something wrong. So what did he do wrong? So to say what he did wrong has a relationship to Baltashkis doesn't seem to be so crazy. Even though there are loopholes, and even though there might be a scenario where it might be mutter, and even though Baltashkis doesn't distinguish between his property and somebody else's property, if we look at the Sefer HaChinuch and Baltashkis, this is something we discussed last week, so the Sefer HaChinuch understands that why is Baltashkis prohibited? Because it's not right, lowly hidabek b'hashkasa, we shouldn't cleave to destructiveness. It's not a Jewish way to act. To go around destroying things is certainly not Alpi Derech HaMusar. So if that's the case, so it could be made that, the point could be made that this is part of what's wrong, that you're coming and breaking his window and you're going to pay for it, but you're acting in a destructive manner. And, alright, so it doesn't distinguish between my property and your property. So in a Hanami, it would be just as bad if I did it to my own window. The only difference would be I wouldn't have to write a check, but it would still be just as bad. I don't know if that's the end of the world. It could be that that's in Achanami true, especially if you consider the fact that the Rush in his Shuvas, the Rush writes that the source for Nezikin is the pasuk, it's actually not in Chumash, in Nach, pasuk of Derachei Adarchei Noam v'chol nesivos Hashalom. So what is the Rosh saying? Basically, he seems to be saying that Al Pi Midos, this is not the way to act, that to destroy things is not in keeping with paths of Shalom and Noam. So if that's the marker, it's not a far different idea than saying the quality of Baal Tashchis, of being destructive, indicates that you shouldn't act this way, and Derachei Adarchei Noam is the same type of idea. So I don't know if we totally have to dismiss Baal Tashchis and say it has no relevance here. But in any case, it's certainly not enough of a mucker, especially because even if we say that's what's going on, that's not going to make it a ben adam l'chaveiro. I'm not going to have to ask mechila from somebody else for acting this way. And the implication we certainly get is that it's an iser, not just stam, but it's a ben adam l'chaveiro, so it's probably not the key source, but I wouldn't necessarily remove it from the discussion completely. So what other suggestions do we have for the source? So to begin with, one source that a number of Rishonim seem to like is Lo Sigzol. And Lo Sigzol on the one hand sounds good because you're costing the guy money. And if you're holding in the whole Meruba discussion, so you may have an approach that the difference between Gzela and Geneva, Geneva has to do with a mice and Gzela has to do with purely costing somebody money, holding somebody's money. Just say holding somebody's money. So maybe this is also Gzela. If I'm causing your bank account to go down, so maybe that's also a problem of Gzela. Now, that's not an obvious point, because you could define gzela as taking something for yourself. And the fact that you're causing him a loss without taking it for yourself maybe doesn't fit the definition of gzela. So you see both halves of that equation, the plus and the pro and the con. You see that in Rabbeinu Yonah. It's often quoted as the source that Lo Sigzol applies is Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah had to comment in Pirkei Avos. In the beginning of Pirkei Avos, the first Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, the second Dibur Maschil Moshe. So everyone cites this Rabbeinu Yonah as saying that Lo Sigzol applies to Mazik as well. But if you read what he says, you see he's actually expressing both sides of this equation, the pro and the con. Because why is he talking about it over there? What's the connection between Gzela and the first Mishnah in Pirkei Avos? So what does the first Mishnah say? First Mishnah says, Moshe Kibol Torah Misina Misar LeYoshua. We have the tradition of Torah from Moshe who gave it to us. So there Rabbeinu Yonah says, we're lucky that Moshe helped us out here, because if we just had the Chumash by itself, we wouldn't really know what a lot of things mean. We wouldn't be able to understand how to apply all the halachas in the Torah. And it's only because Moshe helped teach us what it means that that's why we understand. For example, he says, Lo Sigzol includes within it Dinim of Mazik. That if you're going to break somebody's stuff, so that's included in Lo Sigzol. So on the one hand, you see Rabbeinu Yonah is saying that Lo Sigzol includes Mazik, so that's a key point. But also he's telling you it's a chiddush, telling you that you wouldn't have known this otherwise. So just reading the words Lo Sigzol, you wouldn't necessarily understand that that includes also breaking somebody's stuff and not taking it. And therefore, that's why we need Moshe Rabbeinu to teach us this. So as much as Rabbeinu Yonah lines up on one side of the fence, but the very point that he's making shows us the other side also, that it's not such an obvious point that you could have thought that that's not called Gzela. It's basically saying that this was the Mesorah that Moshe explained to us, the Torah, so now we know that's what it means. But had we not had Moshe, we wouldn't have necessarily known. So you see both sides of the equation really reflected in that statement. And you find other Rishonim seem to express this also, even though in Achronim they're not always so excited about this. For example, Menchas Chinuch says he's pretty sure this is not the Gezel. But there are a number of Rishonim who seem to line up behind this point. For example, the Ran in Maseches Sanhedrin, discusses, it's a whole complicated point how he discusses it, but he makes the point there that Mazik is prohibited to Bnei Noach as a subset of Gezel. That's actually an important question. We say that non-Jews have a prohibition of Mazik, so on the surface it's not one of the big seven, it's not one of the seven mitzvot Bnei Noach, but Gezel is. So if Mazik is subsumed within Gezel, so then it makes sense that that would seem to be one of the seven mitzvot Bnei Noach. And that's the position that the Ran takes. Without getting into it, also, if you're holding a merubah, so you're probably familiar with the sugya in Bav Metzia and Daf Mem Gimel and Aleph, that talks about breaking somebody's kelim, and the Gemara says that Bahai Shaita, the Tavro Shasya Kai Gazale, seems to apply Gzela to breaking somebody's stuff. So on the surface, it's a good possibility there that Mazik has an aspect of Gzela, But again, you'll probably get into the fact that Machlokas Ksos and Nesivas, how exactly to understand that Gemara, whether that Gemara is talking about Midinei Gzela or Midinei Mazik, so it's somewhat of a dispute how to understand that point, but that Gemara also is part of this discussion. We mentioned a few minutes ago that the Bach quotes the Mordechai that one is possible Edus for being Mazik, and there's actually a Safek in the Pnei Yeshua also. If you look in the end of the Gemara Nakones and Daf Samach Beis, so the Pnei Yeshua has a little comment about this, where he says he's not sure what should the halacha be about somebody who's mazik, is he possible edus? So he there takes the attitude that he thinks it's very obvious, that it, or it seems very likely to him, that it's the same thing as gzela. If you say a gazlan is possible edus, so why should there be any difference between that and a mazik? Now, you could question the obviousness. You don't have to necessarily see it as obvious as that, especially if we assume that the basis of possibly somebody lay this is because you want money. So since you want money, so therefore you're going to be susceptible to bribery, you're susceptible, you've proven that not only are you willing to break halacha, but you break halacha because of monetary temptation. So I don't know if mazik necessarily shows you the same point. So that's why I wouldn't know if it's so obvious way the Pnei Yeshua puts it, but that's the way he leans. That he leans towards saying that if mazik is, if a gazlan is pasulaydus, so presumably the same svara should apply to a mazik also. It's basically the same thing. So that's an approach that many did like. Many did feel that gazela has less to say to the mazik as well, and others didn't necessarily see it that way. So if you don't like gazela, or if you don't choose it as a mucker for this din, so then what other possibilities do you have? So another popular choice is V'ahavta l'reach kamocha. It's a popular pasuk in general, and it's a popular possibility here, mostly because, in general, it's a very tough pasuk to understand. As popular as it is, so what exactly does V'ahavta l'reach kamocha tell us? That the Mefarshim have a very hard time with this pasuk, because if we interpret it as it sounds, as the mitzvah say, sounds like I should do something. So, then what does kamocha mean? I have to do good things for people, the same degree to which I do it for myself. It's a very hard idea to understand. So I work to support my family, and I feed my children, and I clean up my house. So I got to do that for everybody else also. And it's impossible to understand even for one person. So certainly for everybody else, it's very hard to understand what does kamocha mean if you see kamocha as a positive commandment. So even though the Rambam does take a view that it's something positive, but this is a problem you have to deal with, and you see hints in the Ramban and the Chumash that this is an issue for him, so what do you do? So there are those, you see this mostly in the Achronim in the back of the Gemara, like the Masha and the Rashash, but there are those who take the negative view. Always look at the negative, sometimes it helps, that is formulated by Hillel in the Gemara in Shabbos, on Daf Lamed Aleph. Familiar with a famous story about Hillel and the Ger. And the Ger comes to, the potential Ger comes to Hillel and says, I want to convert, tell me the whole Torah on one foot. And Hillel says, okay, that which is hateful to you, don't do it to anybody else. And that's the whole Torah, everything else is perusha. So it happens to be nobody looks at the Rashi there, which says that what he meant was that this is not a nice thing to do to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, so you're not going to follow the whole Torah because the Kadosh Baruch Hu created you and gave you a Torah, so you wouldn't want to annoy him by not following it. So that's really what he means. But people don't quote that approach in Rashi. But in any event, so he seems to say that this is the yisod of the whole Torah. So that is basically understood to be the v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha phrase in the negative. That instead of saying, do to others what you want done to yourself, don't do to others what you don't want them to do to you. And that is the approach that many took, that that's really how we understand v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. That, again, this is not the way the Rambam understands it, but it's the way that others took this approach. We basically view it as a negative. We basically view it as a low say. Phrase doesn't have say in the Torah, but its impact is basically negative. Don't do to others what you wouldn't want them doing to you. And there are a number of examples in earlier Svarim and later Svarim of different applications of this. And as far as Mazik explicitly, so you find this in Rishonim, such as Yad Ramah. Yad Ramah writes this, that one who violates Nezek, and he happens to refer even to Grumma, he specifically points that out, the Ramon is in Dov Basra and Afavav Mar Aleph, then you are in violation of Yehavta Recha Kamocha, and a little bit later, the Yamshul Shlomo and Bava Kama in Perek Vav, Chav Gimel, says this also, again, also talking about Grumma, that because of Yehavta Recha Kamocha, so you can't damage somebody else's property, even through Grumma. This is also the approach that Rav Kook took in a tshuva. Rav Kook in his tshuvas Orech Mishpat has a little discussion about this, where he's explaining a Rashi and Gittin, though he doesn't tell you that's what he's explaining, but it comes out that's what he's doing, that explains that even Hezek She'eino Nikar, even if you're going to do some damage to somebody's property, which is not visible, but it depreciates, so that's also prohibited, he says, because really the source for Mazik, he's clear that he considers this to be the real Iker source for Mazik, is V'ahavta Recha Kamocha. You wouldn't want somebody doing that to you. So therefore, practically speaking, he says, so even if it's not visible, it's just a depreciation or a halachic status, so that would also be included. He says, but a loophole would be that if you would do it yourself, if you would do it to your own property, let's say you decide that you're better off breaking this to save that or something like this, so you can make that cheshbon for somebody else also. Because since it's all based on you wouldn't want somebody doing it to you, if you can honestly say, and he therefore goes on to emphasize that kavana here is the ikker, that if as far as your understanding, you can honestly say that you would do it if it was you, then it becomes mutter to do it for somebody else also. So that's his understanding, that v'ahavta recha kamocha is the ikker phrase, and therefore that has that application the way it plays out. The Raman, his statement over there, he also throws in another pasuk from the same parsha over there, from Parshas Kedoshim. He throws in the pasuk of Lifnei Iver Lo Sitein Michshol. We're often focused, when we talk about Lifnei Iver, we're often focused on the interpretation the Gemara has of not causing somebody to sin. But it has a pashut interpretation also, which means don't trip people, don't put things that make people trip. Happens to be the Mechas Chinuch, and that mitzvah quotes a view that it doesn't mean that, right? It quotes a view that if it meant that, Torah would have said, Lo Sasim Michshol. So there is such a minority view, but Pashtus, it has a literal meaning as well. And it's quoted in this context also that you shouldn't cause people to trip. And the Meshach Chachma in Parshas Kedoshim says that if you have a boy, Bershus Arabim, that's a problem of Lifnei Iver. And if you have it in your house, that's a problem of last week of Lo Sasim Dam V'Veisach. So in that context of danger, so there's an interesting suggestion in the Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer has in his tshuvas in Yeridei in Siman Reish Mem Aleph. It happens to be that the context of his tshuva is he's explaining that Rashba that we mentioned at the beginning, the Rashba about why he says Nezikin is a Safek Isser. So in that context, so the Chassam Sofer says you should know that the reason for the Chiyuvim of Nezikin basically does stem from an Isser. It stems from the Isser of, both the Isser and the Asay, of on the one hand, Lo Samar Al Dam Re'echa, and on the other hand, of Nishmarta Me'ol B'Nafsho Seicha. That we have as a halachic value that you should make sure not to hurt people, make sure not to let people get injured. And the Torah, this is the way he understands it, the Chassam Sofer, this is the Torah, B'Chachmasa, estimated that how are we going to have people not put dangerous situations around? Estimated in the right word. The Torah is set up, but how are we going to have people not have things that are dangerous? If we make you pay, if property gets damaged, so then you're not going to want to even let that happen because it's going to cost you money. So therefore, you won't have things around that will hurt property. And Kal Vachomer, you won't have things around that will hurt people. So people will be protected because you're not going to have stuff around that's even dangerous to property because you don't want to have to pay. And therefore, people will be protected. So that's how the Chassam Sofer understands that that's what's going on here. That basically the Torah made the Chiyuvim Mezikin as a gezerah for these yisurim of Osamar Adam Re'echa and the essay of Nishmarta Me'ol Nafshasech. Now it's interesting, if you come from Osamar Adam Re'echa, that could be useful in a different formulation, and this is something that was written in the name of the Rav in the Masorah Journal. The Masorah Journal is a piece from the Rav on this point, where the Rav is quoted as saying that Osamar Adam Re'echa is really the source for the Yisur Nezikin. Because if you look at the way the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvos explains Lo Samar Al Dam Re'echa, so that phrase, Al Dam Re'echa, means two things. Dam means your own blood, means your physical well-being, but we know also Damim means money. So it means both money and physical well-being, that if you see that somebody's property is at risk, just like if you see somebody's person is at risk, you have to save them, so too, if you see somebody's property is at risk, you have to save it as well. So if that's the case, so it seems to be a straight Kal Vachomer that if you can't let somebody else's stuff get damaged, so certainly you can't be the one to do the damaging. It seems to be a straight Kal Vachomer. So that's the way the Rav understands this pasuk being relevant, that you can't let somebody's stuff get hurt, so certainly you can't be the one doing the hurting. So that exact same logic, but for a different pasuk, is adopted by a number of achronim. The Menachas Tinuch, and the Rashash, and the Chalkas Yoav, and the Stipler, as we mentioned before, the Stipler in his first piece in Bava Kamma, all basically use that logic for a different pasuk, for the pasuk of Hashavas Aveda. Because there also, in the context of Hashavas Aveda, the Gemara in Bava Metzia and Daf Amud Aleph makes it clear that Hashavas Aveda doesn't only mean that if I find somebody's wallet, I have to return it to him, but it means also if I see that his laptop is outside and it's about to start snowing, so I have to bring it inside. I have to make sure it doesn't get damaged. So once again, pretty much the exact same logic, just within a different context. If I have to make sure his stuff doesn't get lost, I can't stand by when it happens. So it's very hard to imagine that I can be the agent of destruction myself. So obviously, with Nassim Gestetner and his Chuvis and Laharis Nassim, he's not so sold on this. And similar to the same approach as Stipler took to Baal Tashchis, he's worried about the loopholes. There are loopholes in Hashavas Aveda. For example, if it's going to cost me more money to save his stuff, so I'm patur. So then I can make a case that if I'm going to gain financially from destroying your stuff, I should be allowed to also, because there's no Kavul Chomer from Hashavas Aveda telling me I can't do it. Or, for example, which is a little bit hard to imagine that it's going to play out that way, but another example is you have din of zakim v'enel fichlodo. If you're a dignified person who is going to compromise your dignity to do this mission, so you could say also that if it's not keeping your dignity not to be matzik somebody's property, so I can make that cheshbon also. Again, I don't know exactly how that would play out, but for the reasons of various loopholes, so he wasn't totally excited about that as a mucker as well. The Gra has an interesting suggestion that the Gra in his commentary to Chosh Mishpat in the Bir HaGran Shulchan Aruch, Shanayim Ches, has a suggestion based on the Gemara that you just missed if you started in Merubah, in the end of Hakones, and Samach HaMidei, so there is a whole sugya there about David HaMelech, very difficult sugya, and the question of Asur or Mutter Lahatil Atzmo Vamun Chaveru. Are you allowed to destroy somebody's property in order to save your life, which is a very hard sugya to understand. How does that interact with pikuach nefesh? We normally assume lets you do anything. So you see from the Gemara, the whole story there about David HaMelech and what he wanted to do. So apparently it's an issue. Apparently mazik is a problem from that story. So the Gemara says, you see from there that it's a source from the Divrei Kabbalah, at least a source from Nevi'im, that there is an isser of mazik. So that also, Nassim Gestetner talks about in his Shuvas, and he points out it's difficult to see that as a source either, because really the way we probably assume that Sugya is talking about, even though Rishonim see it differently, but the way some Rishonim see it, is that the question is not are you allowed to do it, because again we assume Pikuach Nefesh, Doches HaKol. Well, not everyone assumes that, and there's Shuvah in the Binyan Seen about this, but that's likely the case, that Pikuach Nefesh allows you to do this. The question is more, once you do it, so do you then have to pay back the guy later? Or can you say, oh, it's Pikuach Nefesh, I don't even have to pay you. So if that's the issue, so this really isn't the source for this and Nezikin. It's presuming Nezikin, and the question is just, do you have to pay for it? We know that paying is an issue. The question is, if you did it to save your life, do you have to pay? So that's hard to use that as a source for an Issa Nezikin. So what are you left with then? If you reject all these possibilities, if you don't take all these possibilities, so then what are you left with as the Issa Nezikin? Or, to phrase the question a little differently, let's say you accept all these possibilities, but you're just wondering, so why do I have to stand on my head to find the Issa Nezikin? Why doesn't the Torah say, don't be mazik, and if you're mazik, pay. So why do I have to go searching for different possibilities and worrying about the loopholes? So I think the pshat is that, and this is a little bit different than Mechus Kavodah from the way Rav Asher Weiss discussed. Rav Asher Weiss in the Sefer writes that, in Sefer and Vayikra, that it has to be, when he starts off the question about Isser, so there has to be an Isser. How do I know there's an Isser? Because there's a chiyuv to pay. So there's a chiyuv to pay, well, it's not because of hana, because you don't get anything out of it, so you have to pay the store owner when you buy stuff, that's because you're enjoying his stuff. But if you're not getting anything out of it, then you have to pay. What's making you pay? Must be there's an Isser. So I'm wondering if you have to, you find such a svarim earlier svarim as well. I'm wondering if you necessarily have to say like that. Maybe the point is, when it comes to Nezikin, that the Chiyuv Tashlumin is really separate from the Issa. That, in a Hanami, if I'm going to come towards your car intentionally with a sledgehammer and break your window, I probably am in violation of Lo Sigzol. I'm definitely in violation of Yahav Borecha Kamocha and Doracha Adracha Noam and Batashkes and many other things. And that's probably all true. But that's not brought up in the context of Tashlum and Ezekim, because that's not why you're Chayiv. The Chiyuv is something else. And the Chiyuv is not necessarily a function of the Issur. Basically, if there is bad weather, there's a storm, and it knocks over a tree lands on my house. So maybe I can have insurance, maybe I can get the money back from somewhere, but I can't sue anybody. There isn't really anybody I can blame. It's an act of God. That's my bad luck. My bad luck, I lost this money. So the Chiddush of Nezikin is that sometimes it's not the bad luck of the victim. Sometimes the bad luck shifts to somebody else if that person is complicit, if that person is negligent. And basically, he has a Chiyuv Shmira. He should have known that there's some danger that's potentially coming out of this. And he has this Chiyuv Shmira. So that is what causes the Chiyuv. And that's the way the Baruch Ber quotes from Reb Chaim. Baruch Ber, in the beginning of Bava Kamma, in the Birkas Shmuel and Bava Kamma, quotes from Reb Chaim that the source really is from the context of Ezekiel. The source is Velo Yishmerenu Bailim. And the Bailim of the object didn't watch it, so that's why it's Chayim. Which isn't necessarily to say that that's an issue. Basically, I think it's to say that there was a responsibility. Since you didn't fulfill your responsibility, so now it traces back to you. In fact, some Achronim like Bessel Zalman, and the Avinah Ezel in his commentary to the Rambam, some others have this Mahalach also, so they understand that basically why you chayiv in Ezekiel, you chayiv in Ezekiel purely because Mamon Chehizik, because your property damaged somebody else's property. And it's just that there's a chiddush that if you properly had protected, if you did your best to be shomer, and it happened anyway, so then you're potter. If you did all the proper steps, that can get out of this chiyuv. So again, it comes from a different angle, but it's not really that there's a chiyuv because of the iser, but more, it's that your responsibility comes from failing to watch, and if that causes damage, so then it traces back to that, but not necessarily because there's an iser. Now, if you do it on purpose, there's a 5 or 6 yisurim that are relevant. But if it happens even without the yisur, so there is a chiyuv as well. And this approach, similar to this approach, was discussed by Zalman Nechemi Goldberg in a journal, the Choshen Mishpat Journal, I'm forgetting what it's called, something like Shari Mishpat or Shari Tzayek, or something like that, where he discusses an approach along these lines. And he basically observes, I think Shai Tzedek it's called, he basically observes that that's really what's going on. It's not that the Isser is the function, but it's the failure to watch. And he says, in that context, we can understand, for example, he explains a couple things. But so you can understand that Gemara says, the Adam Mu'ad La'olam Ben Er Ben Yashan. So a person is always going to be responsible for what he does. We're not going to say that he's not proven to be a mazik, he's a tam, like a shor. A person is always a mu'ud. You can always assume that a person is ready to do damage, even if he's asleep. So if he goes to sleep in bed next to some china, and he rolls over on the china, so he's chayiv. Which is a very interesting idea, because nowhere else do you find, in general, you don't find, at least, that if somebody is chayiv, if somebody does something when they're asleep, when they're totally unconscious, that there's any responsibility for that. I didn't get a chance to read it, but I have here a Sefer Minchas Chayin on Hilchos Shuva, by Oldham Sefer Hilchos Shuva. I saw in the back he prints some tshuvas from his father, I think. So the tshuva, the heading, I didn't get a chance to read it, but the heading of the tshuva was, if somebody extinguished a fire on Shabbos in his sleep, somebody turned out the light in his sleep, so they have to bring a kapara or not. Is there any tshuva to do for the action, the malacha that he did while he was asleep? So I didn't read this right, but in general we assume a person is not conscious, so that's not even a shogeg. He doesn't even, he's not acting willfully at all. So why should such a person be chayef for Nezikin? So it seems to be that Nezikin really functions differently. Nezikin is not about your responsibility for your esser. It's not, oh, you did something wrong, now we make you pay. But Nezikin is a function of your initial shmirah. So an Adam should know if he's going to lie down in bed next to dishes, so very possibly he's going to roll over and break them. And then when he does that, he's chayiv, not because of this iser, this terrible thing he did by rolling over the dishes. That was totally unconscious. The fact that he lay down there to begin with means he brought about it, he didn't properly wash out for things, and therefore when something happens afterwards, so there's a chiyuv for that. And that's why it sounds like from Yerushalmi, I think this is against the Babli, but it sounds like from Yerushalmi, the Zalman Nechemiah quotes, that perhaps if he laid down there first and the kelim are brought afterwards, so then he's going to be potter for that. So that shows you that it's the same action, but lamaisa, it's his initial carelessness that causes the chiyuv, and that's really basically the principle when it comes to nezikin. Okay, so those are some of the major perspectives. Maybe we'll just quickly chazer we spoke about. So we mentioned the fact that it's clear from the Torah that he has to pay for nezikin, and that prompts the question that why don't we say you're not allowed to be mazik? Does that mean to suggest that it's mutter to be mazik if you plan on paying? And that's hard to believe. It doesn't seem to be that anyone actually thinks that. The Rambam certainly doesn't think that. He writes in Mishnah Torah, you're not allowed to be mazik even on Menachos Shalom. And he writes in Hilchos Tshuva, at least even if he asserts himself elsewhere, he writes in Hilchos Tshuva that if you do this, you have to ask mechila, if not enough to pay back, you have to recognize that you did an avera. It seems to be the approach of the Torah and the Shulchan Aruch as well. And we saw that this is various other rites. This is the case. The fact that the Shugya of Ein Shliach L'Dvar Avera gives an example of Mazik as a Dvar Avera. The fact that the Bach Kosh Mamorachad is a Psal Edus. And the fact that the Rashba and that Beizim of Beizim of Akama says that the key principle is Suffolk Isser and not Suffolk Mammon. So the question is, so what is the Makar then? So we mentioned the Stipler throws out right away about Tashkas, because Baltashkas doesn't make a distinction between your property and somebody else's property, and Baltashkas can be Mutter if it's going to be a net gain. So for those loopholes, he says it can't be the proper source for an Ezekiel. And we discussed that maybe Baltashkas does have a role to play when we're talking about the various things you're doing wrong. If you take the idea that Baltashkas is about not having the Midah of Hashkasa, not being involved in being destroying things, so then it's not so off the wall to say that this has a role in what's going on here, even if it doesn't distinguish between your property and somebody else's property, and even if it does have a loophole. And it's not so different from the Rashi's suggestion that Derachei Adarchei Noam is the Makar. So it's basically the same type of idea. It's not a Jewish way to behave. It's not Shalom Dik and Noam Dik. So that's the way the Rashi understands it. So it's not so different from saying that. But even so, that is not the whole story, and that's not going to function as a ben adam l'chaveru. So then we went to some other possibilities, the issue of lo sigzol, the pro is that you're costing somebody money, but the con is that you're not taking it for yourself. And Rabbeinu Yonah shows us both sides, because Rabbeinu Yonah says lo sigzol is the source, but it's a chiddush, because when he did Moshe Rabbeinu teach us that, apparently he wouldn't have known just from the word itself. And we saw also that the Ran says that lo sigzol includes mazik for purposes of Sheva Mitzvah Bnei Noach. And then we discussed a little bit the Pnei Yeshua's discussion, the point about Psoledis. The Pnei Yeshua says it seems to him very likely it should be a Psoledis, because what's really the difference between Gzela and Mazik? In both cases, there seems to be the same thing going on. We question whether that's the only way to see it, but that seems that that's the approach the Pnei Yeshua took. And then he said if we don't use that approach, we could also consider V'yahat HaKamocha, that many Mefarshim understand it to be like the Gemara and Shabbos, a negative formulation, that it's impossible to do for people like you do for yourself, but it is possible to not do to them things you don't want them to do to you. And that might be the key understanding of the pasuk. You shouldn't let things happen to people that you don't want to do to yourself. And the Yad Ramah and the Maharshal, both talking about Grama, both cite V'ahavta Rech Kamocha as a source, that you can't hurt somebody else's property, even Al Yidei Grama. I mentioned how Rav Cook has a tshuva where he cites really V'ahavta Rech Kamocha as the key operating principle, and therefore he says that's why it includes even Hezek Shein and Nicker, and that's why there might be another loophole there, that if it's something you could honestly say you would do for your own property, you could then do it for somebody else's, because V'ahavta Rech Kamocha doesn't answer that. And we mentioned that he also, that the Yad Ramah also throws in Lifnei Ivel Lo Sitei Michshol, which is something that the Meshech Chachma quotes as well. And in that context, we also talked about V'nishmartim ol nafshei seichem ol nesamim ol dam reyecha, that the Chassam Sofer has a tshuva in which he says those are really the key ideas, that the Torah doesn't want you hurting people, and in order to make sure you don't hurt people, so the Torah set up the gezeira that you shouldn't damage people's stuff either, and if you do, you're going to pay. So if you don't want to pay, you're going to make sure to have a safe household, and therefore people aren't going to get hurt. So therefore, nesamim ol dam reyecha and Nishmartem are the sources. And Lassam Adam Riacha, the Rav also is the source with a different approach, that since that includes you shouldn't stand by when somebody's property gets damaged, so Mamela, you're not going to be the one to do the damaging yourself. And that same logic is also applied in the context of a Shavas Aveda. That's the way a number of Achronim, like Menchasinach and the Chalkis Yehov and the Rashash and the Stipler, understood that Hashavas Aveda was a source, because Gemara makes clear that not only are you mechuyev to return somebody's property, but you're not allowed to stand by when it's at risk. So if that's the case, then the Mele, you can't be the one doing it either. We mentioned how the Laharis Nassim and Nassim Gishtadner thought there were some loopholes there as well, Zakin Vainal of Fichlodo, and if it's more valuable for you to let it happen and to not let it happen, and how he also didn't like the Gra's suggestion. The Gra and Chosh Mishpat thought the story of David Malach that we have in Bava Kamma, in the end of Hakoneh, is a source from Divrei Kabbalah, but that is also a difficult source, because it seems like the Sugi is really talking about, once you do the Nezikin, are you mechuyev to pay if it was motivated by Pikuach Nefesh or not? So if all of these sources don't help us, or even if they do, the question still remains, then why is this not stated in the context of Mazik? Why do we have to do somersaults in order to find the source? So it could be that the point really is that it's not our focus, that the chi of Nezikin doesn't necessarily require the Isser, and it's a little bit different than the way Rashi Weiss presented it, because he understood that there must be an Isser because of the chi of the pay, so it shows that there's an Isser. So maybe it's fair to say that really it's not about that, but it's about the fact that if you're complicit, so then the bad luck goes not to the victim, it goes to you. And that's really where Baruch Be'er seems to lean, according to Reb Chaim, that the mukar is v'lo yishmira in a bayla, the chi of shmira, and if you don't fulfill the chi of shmira, so then it becomes your fault. And we mentioned a slightly different approach in Achronim, Reb Zalman, who was also a Talmud of Reb Chaim, who basically understood that really the chi was just because your property does damage, you have to pay. But there's a patur, if you properly watch it, then that gets you out of it. But minasnam, if your property does damage, you're mechuyev to cover it. And therefore, it's not necessarily a function of an Isser. It's a function of your responsibility to watch it. And if you don't watch it, so then there is negligence that traces back there. And that was the approach that Rav Nachemi seems to take also in his article in Shari Mishpat, in which he uses that to explain that... why it is that you're chayiv even if you're asleep. So it doesn't seem to be that in any other area of halacha you're going to be chayiv for something when you're sleeping. You're completely unconscious. So why should we chayiv here? So it seems to be that since you lay down in that position, that already violated your chi of shmira. And therefore, when we say a chayiv, it's not because, oh, you did an isser, so now you're chayiv. Because I guess you did totally without any das. But the chi of shmira was neglected, and therefore that creates a chi of later, even though you weren't conscious when the damage was created. And that could be why the Yerushalmi, against the Bavli, has this view that if you weren't negligent when you lay down there, the dishes weren't there and they were brought later, so then perhaps there isn't a Chiyuv Nezikin. So that's a brief overview of some of these key sources. About Hashem, next week we'll talk about something else. If anybody has any suggestions, please feel free to come forward. If not, we'll try to come up with an appropriate topic before then. Hopefully, before then. Okay, have a fantastic week.
I thought the problem with the...